Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide current educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children. And by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education. Here are your hosts, Paul Tooley and Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. I'm Rose and
I'm Paul. We're here with Education Currents and we're glad that you can be with us.
Yes, and we're going to talk about assessment as a learning experience today. And I have some key ideas, Paul, and I want to throw them at you and then have your input from them. Number one, it is important for students to have different ways to express their learning.
Yes, that's true. There are some exceptions to that. I mean, there are times when if you're doing a specific training, when you look at education, it comes in kind of two categories. There's the thinking part, which you want to encourage your students to be thinkers, which education in America doesn't do that great a job at, actually. And then there are the training part, sort of like, you know, practicing scales. Everybody has to practice scales on the piano. But then as you begin to express the music that you can now play because you practice those scales, then you express that in your own way. So, for instance, if I need an outcome for my students to know the times tables in order for them to do math further on, then I might have the same expectation or try to get them all towards that same goal of memorizing their times tables.
Okay.
But then in the expression of math and the way they would use math and the way they would think about math, that becomes individual.
So if it's a skills we're looking at to see if they've gotten that skill, then it might be a uniform test.
Yes.
But if we want to know how they've taken that skill and made it their own, it becomes an individualized.
Yeah, with a lot of higher order thinking is what you want to be looking for. Higher order thinking in their answers and in the way they answer.
Now, number two, many students are not successful when they are given only one opportunity to show what they have learned. Teachers and parents who are serious about learning and not just grading will give students multiple opportunities to demonstrate their learning.
This is true much more to a limited extent in public school, much more or to a much greater extent in certain private schools. Now, private schools are not just because they're labeled private doesn't mean they do this well. In public schools, we have our hands tied because of No Child Left Behind. And No Child Left Behind, it all comes down to a test that's like a worksheet. And I know in the school I taught and they said, no worksheets, no worksheets. And then, of course, the test was a worksheet and they'd never had any practice on worksheets or answering them, and yeah, they all had to answer the same questions, and so we had some trouble there. But yes, as much as possible, where teachers are professionals, because in public education, teachers are more like technicians; they do what they're told from above, as far as the outcomes. But when you move into the private realm where a teacher can be a professional in their classroom, their expert, then they do want to move towards that idea that they discover or uncover each child's learning style, the way they perceive and manipulate information. And then when we assess, we want to be able to assess them in the styles that they are best versed at, that they can do it the best.
Yeah, so we're not just testing a style.
An example would be, just a quick example would be, let's say I'm going to have my third graders read a story and then I want them to summarize. I should probably have about four different ways they could do that and they can choose. I might say you could write a summary, and some of the kids who are type A personalities would want to write, you know. And I might say to some, I want you to draw a cartoon, a series of comic strip that outlines the story and summarizes what it was. Some I may say, I want you to take a picture that you think represents the most exciting point in the story and put as many things in it as you can from the story, so that now they're working with their art side of their brain, is that the left?
Mm-hmm.
And they're being creative and they're expressing, you know. And others I may actually, if they're very tactile, I may give them Play-Doh. Or I may say a diorama. Please do a diorama of the story. So that they're all are summarizing the story, but they can choose so that it fits their type of thinking best.
Okay, number three. Students are motivated to learn if they have experienced success when their learning is assessed.
Yes, as a matter of fact, and this may sound offbeat to a lot of people, but one of the major things that you need to do between grades 1 and 4 at least is manipulate success for your students so that each student can come away feeling that they're a success at school. Because anybody that's going to a place where they're repeatedly told in either verbal ways or nonverbal ways that they're a failure, they're going to hate the place. They're not going to want to go there. They're going to shut down. Learning is going to stop. And by the time they're in the fourth grade, they will be like a beaten dog. They will not like school ever again, and they will not excel in the academic realm. So they need to be able to feel successful. I think one of the most important things a teacher can do in kindergarten, first grade, is discover each child's success and give it to them. Find out where they can be successful, what they are good at, and as unmanipulated as possible, but still enough to make that kid feel like they're a success and that they have success.
Now, I experienced this firsthand when I was working in the middle school because I was subbing for somebody, so I was using their same grading system. And I noticed that when I put in the test scores, that the grades really dropped or seemed to be excessively elevated. So I realized that they had their grading system set up, you know, weighted. So I decided that I would just use the three weights that were the quiz and the classwork and the homework and just use those, which meant that everyone in the long run got better grades than they had been getting. And the students, I had students crying because they were so happy to have gotten as good a grade as they had gotten. And I thought, man, you know, are we using grades to punish students?
Well, we do. We see the thing that happens for a teacher who's an artist at teaching. I mean, there are teachers who just go by the book, or they go by rote, or they go by what the way they learned or the way they went to school. But a teacher who's a true artist will always start at the basic idea of when they evaluate their student is this student a willing participant in the education process? If they are, grades are pointless and meaningless. If they aren't, grades are pointless and meaningless. I mean, grades are really, by and large, pointless and meaningless. Yes. They're only there to make people who already are struggling with self-esteem feel worse, and those who understand the system and know how to manipulate it feel better. But they don't really accomplish anything. Why couldn't you have a school where success is expected?
Yeah.
Where there is no grading system that punishes anybody, because when you come here, we expect you to be successful. And therefore, you know, if I go out, for instance, if I go out and I say, okay, I want to learn Spanish, so I'm going to go to Rosetta Stone, and I'm going to buy the software, and I'm going to plug it, and I'm going to learn it. I don't get graded. I want to learn Spanish. So I get the course, and I work with it till I get to the level that I want to be in speaking Spanish. Yeah. And it's because I want to learn. Now, if we can get our students so that they understand the joy of knowledge and how fascinating and fun it is to learn things, then there's no need for grades. I mean, what are grades? They're merely a stick to you know, to whack people with. And they're virtually pretty pointless. But I know a lot of people can't get past that.
Yeah, parents can't. You know, we do most of the grades for the parents. And to just put a little caveat here, the principal is the one in this public middle school that was saying, look it, we can do assessment in many different ways. Yes, we still have to do the county's benchmarks and the standardized tests, but in the meantime, if we can do our own little quizzes and tests in a way that students can feel successful, it will ultimately result in them doing better on the standardized tests.
Yeah, but see, again, it's always coming back to those standardized tests, and that's just the terrible sin of American education right now.
Because there is a backlash. There is a strong backlash, and that might be changing.
There is no proven correlation between doing well in standardized tests and doing well in life. And real education should be about doing well in life. Giving somebody self-confidence. You can't, you know, when you have a student, and I know you've been a teacher long enough, and I've been a teacher long enough, and we have adult students that we taught like in the third grade years ago, and when they come up to you and say, "Oh, Mrs. Gamblin, it's never, oh, I remember how well you helped me do on the standardized tests." It's always something in life that impressed them, or something you did that made them feel better about themselves, or something you did that brightened their day or helped them through a difficult time. That's what the rubber meets the road. Real education is about. It's about taking an individual and affirming them in such a way that they can gain enough confidence to take on life and become a successful human being at it.
Amen. Well, I'm going to go to number four. Number four is assessments should be used by teachers to promote learning and not simply as a device to measure whether learning has occurred.
Well, yeah, it's even deeper than that. Assessments should be more about the teacher than it should be about the student. Mm-hmm. So when you assess your students, you should be testing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm a concrete finisher. Now, if I'm good at it, I know what I'm doing already, and it's pretty sure. But if, you know, when I'm starting out, I need to go back and test my concrete to make sure I floated it right, to make sure that I did the job right. I'm not testing the concrete to see if the concrete's going to pass.
Well, now the idea of benchmarks, isn't that to test the teacher?
Well, yeah, it's to test the schools to see if they get their A. You know, it's just, pardon the bluntness. It's an idiotic way that the government has to try to justify or giving the money to the school or punish the school or force it somehow or somehow quantify good education. But the real honest fact is that excellent education is unquantifiable. You can't quantify it. You can't test it. Well, it's like I said, if you talk to anybody who's had their life changed by a teacher, it's never about something that could be tested.
Mm-hmm.
It's about inspiration. It's about giving a whole new perspective on life for that student or throwing them a rope when they were drowning in abuse and hopelessness at home. That's what it's about, and that's what changes their lives. It's about, I remember having a science class, and in that science class, we were just drowning in this boring material. So I abandoned it, and I went and got a whole series on the string theory. This was a 7th and 8th grade science. And we went through that whole series. It was a video series and some experiments in it. When we got done, I had several students come up to me and say, "This has changed my life. I'm going to be a scientist. I want to be a scientist."
Mm-hmm.
So if I sit there and teach science because I want them to pass a certain benchmark, then when I get to the benchmark, I'm done and I'm finished. They're finished. Whatever happens, happens. But if you teach science so that you inspire students and make them fascinated with science, and they can't wait to get more, then the benchmark doesn't matter because they're going to go on to want to know more and know more and know more.
Well, we're going to take a break right here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about number five, the last key idea about assessments. And then from there, we'll go with some ways teachers can actually make assessment rather fun. We'll be right back.
Her name was Pachu, and she was kidnapped after she lost both parents and sold her as a slave to an old lady. That lady heard about the orphanage we built and then came to beg money. But the director there felt something was wrong and he called the police and they found out that she was a slave. So now she is safe in our orphanage and she's a beautiful, beautiful young lady now.
I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and I've chosen Restore a Child as the humanitarian organization I'm going to support.
To make a donation, go to www.restoreachild.org or call 877-745-7833. That's 877-745-7833.
Well, welcome back. back.
Yes, welcome back. We want to make sure that you visit our website at www.educationcurrents.com. That's www.educationcurrents.com. That's the website for our show, and we'll try to keep it updated and have current information there. And
yeah, and if you're a Facebook participant, you can just type the words Education Currents in the search engine, and you'll come to our Facebook page. And we've just started it, so we appreciate anybody who has any comments.
Yeah, and
to
like
join
it.
Us
make
there.
Sure you like it. Yeah, make sure you like it.
Yeah. Okay, number five. Assessments may be either formative, such as the learning is being formed, or summative, to measure what students have ultimately learned after being provided feedback from formative assessments.
Yeah, I mean, the idea between formative assessments, again, are as much for the teacher's sake. The basic model is that we teach, then we assess, then we use what we've assessed to reteach. And then that eventually leaves you to the sum of the knowledge that you're testing. And that sum, again, to me, in my way of thinking, is pointless. By the time you get to testing, which No Child Left Behind is testing the sum, what are you testing it for? Why do you want to know that? You know, I can see maybe if you were going to use it to redo your curriculum for the next year, or to find places where your school is weak, that you could use it for that. But for students' sake, it's useless. For the school's sake, it could be used to improve the school and for the next set of students coming in. But by the time, you know, the water's already under the bridge by the time you get there. And another thing that we'd never take into account is that for kids, school's like being put onto a conveyor belt that's running, and they have to keep running. And once they start stumbling, it's almost impossible.
Yeah.
If you look, and if you did looked at the studies, anybody who is in like special ed classes in the third grade, they'll be that in the seventh grade. They'll be that through mm-hmm. high school. I mean, they never make it. And they know now that probably kindergarten and first grade are your last chances to really do any meaningful change in somebody's life to get them, you know, to help them with either a learning disability, which that could be a whole nother show.
Yes.
Because I think we label kids with learning disabilities that don't really have them.
Yes, they just
they're just unconventional thinkers.
Right. Well, we're going to spend the rest of the show talking about some ideas that teachers have sent us. And the first one comes from Brian Mandel from Virginia. He calls it the Chris test. And I thought I'd tell you what he says, and then you can comment on it. He says that the teacher designs a multiple choice test similar to what they're going to have in the standardized testing. And then the teacher, acting as a fictional student named Chris, takes the test. The teacher then copies and distributes copies of the test that Chris took to the students. Working in pairs, the students go through the test question by question and determine if Chris has answered each question correctly. In short, each pair of students grades the test. As they work together, they discuss the content as well as test-taking skills. This practice can serve as a review that the teacher has taught. The teacher administers almost the same tests to the students the next day.
If your goal is to teach test-taking skills, it's an excellent idea. Because the fact of life is, you know, we're going to have multiple choice,
well,
even though...
Yeah, I think some of the known educators say that standardized tests really only test how well students can take tests.
Right. The whole testing thing is a thorn in my side, but at any rate, that's neither here nor there. We're stuck with them, and that's the way life is. So if you want to teach test-taking, that's actually really an excellent idea for teaching test-taking. Now, as far as taking that test then the next day, I don't know what the point would be to take that same test because most students
would remember what letter.
Remember the letter. They would remember what they did. It would be actually better to give a different type of test. You know, we need to bring the idea, and I know a lot of people are balk at it because they're afraid of it, but the fact is we don't start doing essay work soon enough.
Yes.
And then by the time the kids hit this essay work, okay, this essay question, you know, 50% of them are lost and will never get it. So we need to start earlier in, you know, maybe in the lower grades with, if they have to do it verbally even, to discuss the reason they answered, not just their answer, but why did you give this answer? Think about it, you know.
Well, and I, The CRIS test is great, but I think that it could be the actual test, and what the students would have to do is, just like you're saying, they would have to write the essay answer as to why they picked that.
Yeah. So you go back to the problem, like, okay, if we use the CRIS test, that's one device, but what are you testing? And are your kids interested in what you're testing? Is it relevant to them? Is it relevant to their lives? Have you made it relevant? Have you sparked their interest in it? Or have you been dumping a bunch of information that they could care less of, less about, other than the artificial fact that you're going to put a grade on them and they're going to have to take it home to their parents? But without that, you know, without that grade, they really couldn't care less. You know, if I tell my students, okay, we're gonna do an algebra test, and I say to them, all right, you have a book, and each book has each page is 1 mil thick, and there are 439 pages. How thick is your book? And the students look at you and they blink and they say, well, I just take a ruler out and measure the book. I don't care about it, because it doesn't make any sense to them. They don't, you know, it's like a bunch of Mensa tests. They don't see any connection between math and real life at all. And if you look at any standard math book, it does have very little connection between math and real life. So the trick, before you even worry about these devices, you know, what am I testing? Have they been interested in this subject? Have we been having a good time in class? Have we been teaching gently and entertaining largely?
Yes. Yeah, that's a good phrase. Okay, I'm going to the next practice, and it was sent in by Francis Roberts. It says, the red dot practice. The teacher administers the test. As the teacher grades the test, he or she places a red dot next to any question that was answered incorrectly. The teacher returns the test to the students and gives students a chance to make any corrections and resubmit the test for a final grade. What do you think of that?
Here's the thing. I mean, it's good for relearning. It's good for, I think that every kid should have a chance to correct their mistakes. That's how they learn. Eventually, you have to come to a point in our education system, unfortunately, where one test finally counts. I mean, it counts. Now, if you do that with teachers using these different methods within the same school, then the grades don't mean the same thing. If I get an A in Miss Miller's class, it's not going to be the same thing as if I got an A in Professor John's class, because she put a dot and let me redo the test, and he just gave the test, and whatever I got right and marked it. So the one group of kids and that were lucky to get in Miss Miller's class now are getting the A's on the report card, and they're getting the little rewards from their parents, and they're getting to take their A's down to Chuck E. Cheese and play free video games. Where in Mr. Miller's class, where he's more traditional and he just says, you know, get ready for the test and here it is, these kids don't. And so now I have a school that really doesn't, the letter grade doesn't mean the same, it doesn't have a standardized meaning.
Well, guess what? That's exactly how it is. The grades do not have a standardized meaning. That could be another whole show, that there are a lot of researchers now that are saying, hey, wait, grades don't have any standardized meaning. They absolutely don't.
Well, the next step is they're going to realize they have no meaning at all.
Okay.
Well, I guess our time is up, so we're going to say goodbye for this session of Education Currents. Please remember to go to our website at www.educationcurrents.com. Visit our Facebook page and give us a like.
Yes. And next week we're going to continue with assessment, but we're going to filter it through, what would Jesus do if he was the teacher? So be sure and come back.
Yeah, leave your questions either on the website or on the Facebook page for us if you have any, and we'll try to answer them.
God bless.
You've been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media. We're now on Facebook, and we'd love to have you join our discussion. Once you're in Facebook, just type in the name Education Currents. We'll also like to thank our production staff, the various networks that make this broadcast possible. For more information on education topics, go to educationcurrents.com. That's educationcurrents.com.